time for Tools Day. Images are neat. Time for Tools Day. They make the web complete. Time for Tools Day. But they're so big, we need a lesson. So let's talk about image compression. Tools Day.
It's the last whisper. It's so good.
Thought I'd give you a treat with the audio, with the music in the background this time.
I
we
expect,
got some Tools Day karaoke going on.
I expect music to be there on every song now.
I'll find, do my best.
Find a backing track.
Yes, that is key. So welcome to a podcast not about karaoke, but about tech tools, tips, and tricks on Tuesdays at 2. I'm your co-host, Yuna.
And I'm Chris.
And today we're talking about
Images.
So when we were preparing for the show, we kind of talked about it, and we didn't want to just do a show about like your standard image tools that you might have heard of before, the standard GUIs. We wanted to talk about some of the new things that we've been learning in the past couple of weeks. And there's a lot that we've been learning the past couple of weeks that we wanted to share about images. So like new format types, ways to integrate those, and lots of fun little things that we know now about images, like little fun tidbits and tricks. So let's kick it off and get started with some of those tools that we know and love that we use so much before we get into some of like the more fun things. So Chris, what dev tools do you use for images?
Yeah, real quick, when Yuna says when we have been learning, she actually means when she has been learning, because I know absolutely nothing about images beyond what I stole from Yuna a year and a half ago, which is in fact my tool set. So my tool set is a combination of Gulp ImageMin and this pretty cool thing called SVG Symbols. So Gulp ImageMin is a image modification build step for Gulp, as the name kind of implies, and it's a combination of a couple different image minification tools. Rather, it's SVGO, OptiPNG, and JPEG-Tran, and it runs each of those three types of formats, PNG, SVG, and JPEG, through a minifier and does a bunch of preset best practices to kind of shrink them down. So if you have, you know, an unoptimized image, it will do approximately half, maybe, of the file size will get chopped off. The SVGO one is the only one that really requires some more, you know, tender loving care and attention. SVGs, when they get exported from Sketch or Illustrator or any other vector tool, oftentimes will have a bunch of garbage in the XML that does nothing but bloat the file size. And so SVGO can remove those, but may require some custom configuration. So if you're using Gulp ImageMin and SVGO, check your config to see if you can eke out some more bytes. But that's pretty much the only image minification tool. Our SVG Symbols was something that Yuna set up a year and a half ago, and it's kind of the way we do sprites across Bluemix. And so we have it's been so long, but it's used across over 130 different teams now inside of Bluemix.
Whoa!
So it's like kind of it's ballooned out, and I feel like we're the only people using symbols this way. But I haven't seen anyone else use it this way. But there's a SVG Symbols spec where you have an SVG wrapper around a use element, and the use element points to a SVG sheet or SVG file that's external to the domain you're on, and then you just kind of refer to an ID, and then
everyone uses symbols that way. What are you talking
really?
About?
I don't see that anywhere else.
It's great. It's a great way.
Well,
to
then
do it.
Jokes on me. I have no idea. So I'm just but it's been amazing for us because we've been able to kind of standardize icons across the entirety of Bluemix through the sprite sheet. And the developers in every different team have kind of jumped on board with this because it's so easy for them to use. And so that's kind of how we've got SVG icons across Bluemix.
Nice. So you brought up SVGO, which is a great tool that you have implemented with Gulp system. You can also implement with Grunt and any other build system. I'm sure Webpack also has an SVGO add-on plugin option. So kind of adding on to that, I want to talk about a GUI called SVGOMG. And this tool is something that is built by Jake Archibald. You can find it online if you just Google for SVGOMG. And it's a really great way to sort of visualize some of those changes that Chris just brought up in terms of getting some extra bites out. What's that doing to your image? Like, you might not notice that it might be actually making your image worse, your SVG, if you have certain options checked. So it's like a great way to visualize changes in the browser and minify that image and then save it down to your system. So if you're working with SVGs, implement it with your build task, but also if you want to try out some of the configuration options of SVGO, SVGO OMG is a good tool for that. Kind of going along the path of these GUI tools, there's two more that I think everyone should be using. There's Image Alpha, which allows you to take an image, edit it, like edit the color properties, dithering, try different backgrounds on it, and see what the visual result looks like. There's also Image Optum, which I love so much. I'm trying to like set a trend of this phrase, Image Optum Always and Often.
Has it caught on anywhere?
Nope.
Is there a hashtag yet?
Hashtag IOAO.
Amazing.
Come on, Tools Day listeners. You got this. I believe in you. You're my people. Anyway, so Image Optum is like a magical tool. You can drag an entire folder of images and just like watch the images just trickle down in size. It's so, so, so magic. Works for GIF, JPEG, PNG. It just doesn't work for SVG images. But there, it uses a variety of compression algorithms. I think it uses like PNG Crush instead of OptiPNG. But you get a really awesome result in the end. Yeah, so there's that option, and it just works miracles. Like, little side tangent, there's a project called Yarn that just came out that I'm sure
Yarn,
many of you have
heard so of. Amazing.
Yeah. So it's a really fast tool for basically replacing npm install in a way, but not the npm registry.
Yeah, if you use npm today and you don't use a private registry like Synopia, you should just stop what you're doing, install Yarn, and then your life will become about 5 times better, at least.
Yes. And it also has a yarn.lock file, which kind of works like an npm shrink wrap, so you have all those goodies like that are all ready to go with it. So that was our entire show on Yarn.
Yeah, that's all you need to know.
That's like all you need to know.
Maybe one day we'll do a longer Yarn. There's nothing more to talk about Yarn.
I don't know.
Really.
That's all
it's
you
just
need
like,
to know, really.
You just start using it, and it's faster.
Set it and forget it.
Yeah.
So I brought it up because they had a site that came out, and it was in October, which is Hacktoberfest, and I was like in a super, like, I'm going to do pull requests in all the repos kind of mood. So on Yarn, I just took, they had like 5 watercolor images on their homepage, compressed them using Image Optum, like literally took me 3 minutes, saved like 250 kilobytes.
Wow.
And that was after they had already compressed their images. Like, they told me, like, we've gone through, like, this compression, like, 3 times. What? How do these images keep getting smaller? So it was just cool to see that that was such a quick, fast change that saved a lot of kilobytes from being sent to your user.
So was that a JPEG you had compressed? A PNG?
I think it was a JPEG.
Okay. So why did they use a JPEG over a different
file? Because they had a watercolor graphic.
Okay.
Like a cartoon, and had like a lot of tonal gradation in it. Oh, do you want me to explain like the difference between JPEG?
I would love this explanation.
I wasn't catching on. So basically, you should use a PNG pretty much whenever you have an image that doesn't have a lot of color data on it, like a lot of colors. If you have like large blocks of color, versus a JPEG where you have a lot of tonal gradation and you have like a photograph. A PNG actually comes in 2 variants. It comes in a PNG 8 and also a PNG 24 variant. So fun fact, the PNG 8, because the compression is better in a PNG, is better than a GIF of like a similar quality. But PNG 8 means it's 256 colors. That's all the color data that you get. Also supports transparency. What happens with the PNG is that it's good for colors that have like large blocks of the same color. So like if you have cartoon images, for example, sort of art that is not too different in tones, like tonal gradation, then you should use a PNG. But sometimes if you have like a photograph with a lot of like a wide range, you want to use a JPEG because the compression is better for a JPEG. See, a PNG will use sort of like the differences between pixels. So if the pixels are similar, it will encode 0, which saves space on your disk. But if there are a lot of differences between those images, then, I mean, in between those pixels, because it's lossless, you're going to be rewriting every single pixel, which is not great for saving memory. Whereas a JPEG will always go through a compression algorithm, no matter what. So, okay, that was me talking for a
long time. No, so it's actually fun facts for me, because I always had in my mind that use JPEG for everything, use PNGs if you needed transparencies, and then use GIFs for small icons or small things. And so it's kind of new news to me. And I haven't revisited this mentality for like 6 years, which is probably why I'm sad out of date. I always remember like pressing file save to web from a Photoshop and clicking through the different options, and PNGs would be so large. And I always wanted to use them because I wanted the transparency, but I could never justify them.
The great thing about the Photoshop Save for Web screen is you can visually see the changes in your image sizes. So you can very easily compare a GIF versus a PNG versus a JPEG whenever you're saving an image out. And that's kind of like why I think that Photoshop is a really awesome GUI that might be like the best photo.
You can't see Yuna's face right now, but I can. She's just like grimacing as she says these words of Photoshop is good at something.
I don't hate Photoshop. That is a common misconception, because I gave one talk that was called Photoshop is Dead, and it was about
I don't hate Photoshop. I just wanted to die graphics. A cruel death, you know.
I'm sorry, Adobe. I think Photoshop is great for image performance, for manipulation, but I don't know. I think the web is a more creative medium in terms of presenting a prototype and editing images visually. That's a whole nother topic.
So what is your workflow with this then? Do you use Photoshop first and then hop into image minification programs?
Yeah, so I think the biggest savings you get are when you save for web from Photoshop, which now is behind another door because there's like a new like export function, but there's still like the save for web if you look for it. So save for web, see what kind of optimizations you can make there. You can change quality on JPEGs, you can change color on GIFs and dithering type. Oh, a little fun fact, there's multiple types of dithering in a GIF. Did you know that?
Yes. I don't know what dithering is, so no, I have no idea.
So dithering is basically adding noise to remove distortion in images. And the reason why you need it is because of the limited color range of an image format like the GIF, which is a maximum of 256 colors plus the original image's data. So if you have a gradation of like a shadow that's kind of softly fading out, you don't have enough image color data to represent every single one of those shades of that fade out. What you can do is then dither. And dithering will like add like kind of dots to the image so that it looks like a more smooth transition. And so with dithering, there's two types. There's a noise dither, which is kind of more random, but it looks like a little more like it flows with the natural like original image. And then there's a pattern dither, which kind of rewrites the whole image, but it ends up being much smaller than a noise dither. Fun fact, I didn't know that until I like looked into it, so I thought that was kind of cool. I kind of like pattern dithers too, because they're pretty.
And these are GIF dithers?
GIF dithers, GIF. Yes.
You mean GIF
GIFs, dithers? Yes.
Okay, great, good. I'm glad we agree on this. Interesting. So does this dithering thing work with animated GIFs as well?
So with animated GIFs, it actually is a much... It's an effect that makes a larger impact, because each of the frames is an individual image that you're saving within one sort of like image that you're presenting, if that makes sense. Like if you ever open a GIF in Photoshop or like Jask Animation Shop 3, say, if you live in 1998,
okay,
then you can see every single frame individually, and you can edit every single frame individually, and that's what a GIF is. It works as just presenting like a lookup data, lookup table of data,
right,
to your user.
Although, of course, now you shouldn't use GIFs. You should use our great new format, WebM, our best friend. If you've seen a bunch of animated GIFs on the web today, which of course everyone has, we have this great tool called Jiffy in our Slack channels. Oftentimes they're not actually showing GIFs, they're showing WebM video, because WebM is just so optimized now You can get these file sizes that are just tiny and so much more performant than just a GIF. And
WebM, like WebM. You can have the size of most MP4s with WebM. It's an incredible savings. And with WebM, like the cool thing about latest changes in technology is that now, fun fact, with iOS 10, you can get free silent auto, like auto playing of videos, which wasn't a thing that was a jumble of words. Auto playing videos are now a thing in iOS 10 if they're silent. So that means if you have like a hero image that's like a video, it autoplays. And if you have these fake GIFs, which are actually WebM videos, they autoplay. So that's super exciting.
I don't actually know if Android does that as well.
Chrome is usually so
good about like keeping up to pace. And any web spec, especially on phones, like Chrome on Android has progressive web apps. Something that Safari does not yet.
Well,
but,
of course they do, because it's Chrome. What do you mean? That's the whole point.
But I feel like I have to press play on a WebM video on my Android device. I'll look it up.
I don't know. I just know that in iOS 4, they introduced the fact that you had to press play, which makes sense. Memory, data, battery, etc. But like for me, it was kind of a big issue because I had like a college, like university project where I was creating this like fake prototype. Long story short, I really needed some auto playing videos and it wasn't a thing. So I had to make all these GIFs, which were huge. And then playing those GIFs on my mobile phone was just awful.
I like this hard G coming out of these GIFs. These GIFs.
It's hard
Chris.
Life
these
when
GIFs.
You don't know how to pronounce GIF. So yeah, I learned quickly. But you mentioned WebM,
right?
Which sort of brings me to my next format that I want to talk about, which is WebP. And WebP was inspired by WebM, which I think is pretty cool. So kind of the new trends in image technology these days are getting inspiration from video codec formatting. And the way that video formats is different than traditional images like JPEG. I'm going to talk about JPEG really quick to just compare. So the way that JPEG compresses images is that it breaks up every single color layer, so RGB, into a luminance, a red chroma and a blue chroma channel, and then it goes through an algorithm, which then uses a quantization table. It uses the quantization table based on the quality that you set when you save that JPEG, and that goes through this 8x8 pixel grid, and that's what determines like how sort of kind of artifacty or like banded your image is. It uses those quantization values on the 8-pixel grid to determine like how much compression is done, and then it goes through a couple of other algorithms and resaves your image every time. So every time you're saving a JPEG, you're losing quality no matter what. Even if you save a JPEG at 100%, you're always going to be going through every pixel by with this 8x8 pixel grid and resaving it.
Did not.
So the way that video formats are saved, like the HEVC codec, is it looks at the differences between the pixels. So movies that actually have more movement in them create larger file sizes because it's tracing the differences. So that's kind of like how, if you look at this difference, it's kind of like the pixels that you're providing a JPEG are just there, right? But in a movie, in a video, you kind of have to buffer, you have to load the difference. Like you get sort of like a function instead of the lookup table values. So the way that WebP is encoded is it also looks at the differences between those pixel values. So if you have like a big blue sky, you're not going to have as much gradation. It doesn't have to encode the difference between every single picture. It's not going to go through the entire optimization process that a JPEG does. And they end up being 10 to 30% smaller, closer to the 30% range on average than a JPEG. And more studies have shown that WebP is also smaller than PNGs in general. So they also have alpha transparency.
Okay,
they
wow.
could be a,
that was my
yeah.
next question, right? I was like, oh, but can I do alpha? And that's, I mean, what is the browser support for this? I have these kind of horrific memories of back in the day testing for a file support, it failing, and then backing up down to like a JPEG in like IE 6 or 7. Is it kind of the same thing? Can we use picture set for this? In picture?
You can use a picture element. And great that you bring that up, because that is kind of how I would recommend using WebP. If you use a tool called image magic, which is like kind of my favorite image manipulation tool. It's like a CLI tool. Also, it integrates into Webpack, Gulp, Grunt, etc. You can use it just with Node scripts. But ImageMagick CLI, you can just brew install ImageMagick. You have it on your system, and you have a few different functions that you can use. And one of those functions is changing the file format. So you can just type like Mogrify.
Transmogrify?
It's called Mogrify. Yeah, that's like the name of the
function. I love these wizarding words.
Yeah.
Harry Potter, by the way, comes out in 2 days. Oh, like next week, sorry.
Wait, what? Sorry?
Harry Potter next week.
Wait, what?
Harry Potter?
What do you mean? What do you mean, Harry Potter? What's new with Harry Potter?
The new Harry Potter movie comes out next week?
Oh, that's not Harry Potter.
I mean, it's better than Harry Potter, really, but...
It's not Harry Potter. Okay, it's not the original.
Okay.
You scared me. I was like, oh my gosh, new Harry Potter? So back to magic wizards and image magic. Image magic is spelled, by the way, ImageMagick. So if you were like to Google it, remember it's a CK. But yeah, it's awesome. You can just save out all your JPEGs to also have WebP versions, and then use the picture element, which has really good support pretty much across the board, to send both the JPEG and the WebP. And that means that your clients with Chrome and Opera will get your WebP. But unfortunately, Firefox and Safari don't support it yet.
Firefox is kind of always the bummer. When we were making the first transition to WebM, Firefox was behind a bunch of different licensing issues. They had like this OGG format, .org, that nobody else used.
Yeah.
It was just Firefox. And it was like the first time I remember thinking, wow, Internet Explorer is doing this better than you, Firefox. But you know, they've caught up since then, and it's kind of great. It's one of those things that I think people don't value as much or don't think about, that this kind of advances in image compression and movie compression have allowed so much more creativity on the web, right? Since most of the web is now images, it feels like.
64% to be exact.
64%. Being able to serve these images in a performant, responsive, all that work on that picture element and that source set, that's been done in the last 4 or 5 years has really pushed forward the spec quite a bit since when I first started doing this kind of stuff.
It's been pretty impressive. So there are other ways to use WebP if you want to. There is a polyfill that you can use, and you can also set it like the server and do browser detection before you send your images in the first place, which is probably the best solution if you have the capability of editing your server configuration. But the good news is that Firefox and Safari are experimenting with WebP image support, which is like, it means a lot in the image world. It means a lot because no one agrees on anything. Do you know there's like 6 different types of JPEGs?
I'm not surprised. I feel like that XKCD article about standards applies so much to the picture. Like the picture consortium, the people who decide things to do with images.
It's ridiculous. It's like there are 6 different image types of JPEGs, and then like one image type is only supported by IE and Edge, and one is only supported by like Safari. It's just silly. So that's why WebP is really exciting, because all of the browsers are kind of thinking like, okay, I'll implement this. It's kind of not great to work with right now because you can't like open WebP in Photoshop and manipulate it. And that's, I guess, because of how it is compressed. So maybe in the future we'll see support for that locally, but right now you just have to kind of convert it with either an online converter or with ImageMagick or with a conversion tool in your build process.
I guess if you're using the picture element anyways, you should probably be running some sort of build tool to kind of generate the different formats and then just kind of pick and choose each format as a source and in your picture element anyways. So
yeah, definitely. So I kind of want to talk about one last image format before we go, and that image format is called the FLIF.
That's a great name.
FLIF. So the FLIF is a lossless image format. It's both lossy and lossless, by the way, fun fact.
Okay.
So is WebP. But tests on the FLIF, which is, by the way, a baby. It's like 2 years old. It's like a real baby. Show that it's faster. It's smaller than the lossless WebP. and PNGs and JPEGs of the world, which is really cool to see that start to come out. And there's a bunch of studies done on the FLIF site, which is flif.info. That's the site name.
Wow.
That show it against a corpus of images and show it outperforming all of the other things that we mentioned on the show. So watch out for that. The coolest thing about FLIF is how it pertains to responsive design, and that's because you can encode multiple images within a single entity with FLIF. So when you are loading a web page in the browser, you can start to load FLIF images without knowing what the final aspect ratio of it is going to be or what the final quality value is going to be of the FLIF. Wait, you can just start loading it and then determine that as the browser detects more information.
Are there more than one image in it? And it just... So, wait. Is it doing this by network traffic? How does it decide?
It seems like magic to me.
Okay.
But the best way that I can sort of wrap my head around it is it allows you to encode these multiple images. And I think of that as like GIFs, how they have multiple frames.
Okay.
There's like images within an image, right? It's like frames within a frame.
Got it.
I think that's sort of how I'm going to wrap my head around FLIF for now until someone explains it to me a little bit better. FLIF. It's a cool concept. So it's kind of where images are going, like the future of web imaging.
Wow. Well, I'm excited to see FLIF.FLIF take over my web. Well.
One day soon. I hope that you learned something. I feel like there was a lot of like fun little tidbits in the show about image compression, things that you might not have known, things that you should implement. There's lots of cool stuff out there. So please just try to make some small improvements. Image optim always and often.
Image optim always. And if all that fails, Gulp Image Bin, so easy to use. Just plug into your system if you use Gulp already. And it is almost automatic for everything. So at the very least.
Image magic, the things. Image magic, everything. All right. Well, thanks for tuning in this week. If you liked our show, please like or rate or subscribe. I hope that you already subscribed if you are hearing this, but who knows?
Maybe you're on the website. It's possible.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
If you're on the website, thanks. We love you. Bye, y'all.